This is Apologetics Profile, a podcast ministry of Watchman Fellowship Incorporated, Arlington, Texas, helping and equipping you to better understand the world of non-Christian ideas and religions, one conversation at a time. Please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, or you can become a patron of the podcast at patreon.com/watchmanfellowship.
We live in an age dominated by technology and the authority of science. Our present moment in history, however, did not happen overnight. Since the 18th century Enlightenment, there has been a slow and gradual secularization of culture over the past two centuries, achieved largely through the sciences. We are, in the 21st century, a generation simultaneously struggling with both a loss of control and identity, and a fervent crusade to regain a sense of control through our technological advancements. But in such a technological milieu of human achievement and discovery, God has seemingly become obsolete. As the late philosopher Martin Buber has noted, quote, "The reality of God has essentially been overshadowed for many modern people by their hugely inflated estimation of human potential," end quote. Dr. Craig M. Gay, in his 1998 book, The Way of the Modern World, or Why It's Tempting to Live as If God Does Not Exist, notes that, quote, "The most significant consequence of modernity's inflated stress upon human agency and rational technical control, then, is that many aspects of modern social life have been quite thoroughly secularized," end quote. One of those aspects of social life today that dominates our discourse is social media. Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, Discord, and a host of other platforms found online are, on the one hand, technological marvels of our time, but on the other hand, have negatively conditioned our interactions and dialogue with one another. We are, as sociologist Dr. Sherry Turkle notes in her 2011 book, Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology and Less from Each Other, quote, "Online, we invent ways of being with people that turn them into something close to objects. The self that treats a person as a thing is vulnerable to seeing itself as one," end quote. Social media is inherently anti-incarnational. Secularization of our social lives doesn't just mean God appears irrelevant, but that our physical bodies are irrelevant as well. We do not participate with one another in bodies. We often don't see a smile, catch a tone in the voice, and we are unable to accurately receive all the numerous impressions a live face-to-face interaction affords us. How then can a Christian intelligently engage with others in such a secularized environment where God and bodies, or God in a body, are irrelevant to a majority of people? How can we effectively redeem the medium without becoming secularized, disembodied objects and avatars ourselves? On this special two-part episode of Apologetics Profile, we talk with former atheist and astrophysicist Dr. Sarah Salviander, who actively engages in ministry outreach to seekers and skeptics on Twitter. Sarah shares her experiences with us in engaging people in social media and offers us sound, practical advice for how we can prevent social media from dehumanizing both our interlocutors and ourselves. Here is Watchman's senior apologist, Brady Blevins.
I am Brady Blevins, and welcome to another episode of Apologetics Profile. And we are addressing a topic today that I guarantee if you do any kind of conversing online, you've run into this situation where somebody goes to maybe make a comment about God or the Bible, and maybe they're a believer, maybe they're an unbeliever, maybe they ascribe to some other faith system. And you make the decision to interact with them, and then you find out that it goes horribly wrong. and so what I want to do today is I'm talking with a couple of people who are very knowledgeable about witnessing online. One is our very own Daniel Ray, a very familiar voice if you are a normal listener to the podcast. Then a very special guest, Sarah Salviander, and I'm going to let Daniel introduce her a little bit more. Daniel, give us a good introduction for Sarah.
Well, Sarah and I met online a couple of years ago, and then I asked her to be a part of our book, The Story of the Cosmos, And so our relationship professionally developed through the book and then through interaction on Twitter, which is where we originally met. And so I've been fascinated with Sarah's work. She has come from an atheist background and came to Jesus, and then she'll be able to tell more about this, of course, through her study of astrophysics. It led her to theism and then later to Christianity through the works of Gerald Schroeder. She's got a fantastic following on social media, and she gets bombarded with tweets and interactions from atheists on and through the medium of social media. So she's not only knows what she's talking about when she talks about atheism, she's converted to Christianity. She knows both sides very well. Her family, her father, her brother have all become Christians. God has done a wonderful work in their lives. I've had the blessing and the opportunity to have dinner with them, to meet their family, and to see Sarah speak live on the chapter in her book. So it's been a fantastic relationship that I've been blessed by. And she's a friend and a professional, and really has a wonderful knowledge of the subject, not only of the science of astrophysics, but of atheism and Christianity and apologetics as well.
Glad to have you with us, Sarah. Daniel, always good to chat with you. So as we enter into this conversation of sharing your faith online, honestly, and I know, Daniel, you and I have had many conversations about this. The platform really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, whatever the case is, because a lot of these conversations have the potentiality of going south very quickly. And there's I guess really an underlying theme that I think is important for us as believers to realize is that, first of all, the Bible tells us in Ephesians 4:15 that we are to speak the truth in love. And so kind of everything that we say, that the three of us say from this point forward in this podcast, just remember we're undergirding it with this idea of speaking the truth in love, because sometimes you run across some really ridiculous things being said online. And by the way, when I say this, I'm not talking about just from, you know, atheists, agnostic, unbelievers, maybe they're from a different faith, but I see it just as much from Christians as well. Or in fact, sometimes with fellow Christians, they don't speak the truth in love. They're all truth and not enough love. And that's something that's a mistake I don't think we can afford to make, to be able to move forward and not be kind in our response. And so we'll speak to that in just a minute. But I guess to kind of start our conversation today, I want to think about a particular passage of scripture from Proverbs chapter 26, and it's verses 4 and 5. And the Bible says this: "Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him yourself." Then verse 5 says, "Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes." It's almost contradictory as you're looking at these two verses, these two sentences, one after another. But really what the proverb here is teaching us is there are some things, there are some errors that we see that we should respond to. And then there are some errors that if we do respond to them, we're only giving credibility to a very foolish saying. So, you know, Sarah, I'm going to throw this to you first. How do you decide? How do you triage what comes in? What do you decide? How do you decide what am I going to answer and what am I going to just let go?
Great question, because I get a lot of stuff. And at this point, I would say that I have developed an intuition for who is serious and merits the attention and who doesn't. It's kind of a tricky thing, but there are some tip-offs, there are some giveaways. I automatically ignore people who use words like sky daddy, your invisible friend, you know, things like that, that tell me that this person isn't serious. They just want to argue, and I'm not gonna donate my time for that. But there are people who are sincere, and it's a skill you have to develop. And I'm sure that Dan has developed this as well, where it's how they ask the question, it's the things that they say, the way they respond to you, that indicate, yes, they're skeptical, but they have sincere questions. Now, there's also sort of the fools who will pose questions to you, and they're not sincere. But since you've got an audience who's looking at this, then you know, often it is worth the time to respond to this, because the Christians and the seekers who are looking at this are wondering, well, gee, okay, he's asking this question. What is the answer to this? What to this challenge? And so, in that case, it's worth it to spend the time to answer it.
So what I'm hearing you say is that sometimes you'll answer some of these things, not necessarily for the individual who's asking or making the statement, but more for the purpose of the audience that is peering in on the conversation, that there may be a benefit to answering this question for all those who are looking in on the conversation.
That's correct.
Very good. Very good. Daniel, what do you think as you're trying to triage and figure out, okay, what should I answer? What should I not? Would you have anything additional to add to what Sarah has said?
I affirm everything that she has said. I've learned quite a bit from watching her interactions on Twitter. I joined Twitter 2 years ago, well, almost 3 years ago now, to promote our book. Mm-hmm. I had no idea how to use social media wisely. You know, the idea is you just get on there and you advertise yourself or something, but there is a nuance to the kind of platform that you're on. But Sarah's very insightful there in terms of being able to develop the gift of discernment. You know, God has given people discernment. I mean, that is what we are called to do as believers. Everybody has this gift to a certain ability to be able to discern. And so one of the things that has most surprised me about social media interaction is exactly what Sarah said, and I can affirm this through experience, and I'm just speaking of Twitter here, where I will get direct messages, private messages from people who appreciate what I've said or what I've done, who have told me they learn things from me, they appreciate what I'm doing, they watch and see what I do. And sometimes that just comes out of the woodwork, especially on a longer thread where there's a lot of atheists who are being snarky or, you know, whatever the case, that there will be Christians that come along, and sometimes people I don't even know that are watching or follow me or whatever will make these wonderful comments. And you realize that something that you said did help somebody else. Mm-hmm. And so that really does happen. So there might be people who watch and learn and glean something from it, but will never have published or post anything. You know, they'll watch. And so there's a lot of people, like I have a good friend in California who's on Twitter just to watch me. And he learns, he says he appreciates what I'm doing. And so if you're civil and if you're using discernment, and as Sarah said, it's a matter of a filter of time. Do I want to invest time in this? And if I do, what are my boundaries and what are my purposes and what is my out? What are my limits? Where's my line? And everybody has a line, and it's essential that you have a line. It's essential that you have a structure before you go into a conversation. Otherwise, it's just going to be an endless litany of responding to nonsense. And so you have to have boundaries for yourself and for the sake of people that are watching. And yes, people that watch give it a sense of artificiality, because everybody's posting, obviously, in a public medium to be seen. And so that's where humility comes in, and discernment, and being able to understand what's going on here. But as Sarah knows, she has much more experience in this than I do. You can see the same questions and the same replies basically over and over again. So there's nothing new that you're going to see. And those really do help you over time see who is, who enables you to see who is serious and who isn't.
That's excellent. You mentioned something, and I think that this is something that I know I've tried to do this before. I'm not saying I'm an example to follow by any far stretch of the imagination, but to take the time when you do see a conversation online, because I mean, we've all done it. We've all read conversations that two people are involved in, and to take a moment and privately message that person and give them the encouragement, hey, I watched your interaction. I learned something, or maybe you didn't learn anything, but hey, you did a really good job defending the faith there. And I just want you to know that it certainly didn't go unnoticed by me. And I just can't help but think of the other people who saw it. And I really appreciate what you've done. I mean, it seems like that's what this one fellow that you were talking about has done for you, Daniel. And I can't imagine what kind of encouragement that is to you and what kind of encouragement we could be to others when we're watching these kind of interactions take place online. How do we speak the truth in love when we're online? How do we maintain that civility when sometimes people may say something back to us and we take it as rude or short or offensive, and maybe they didn't mean it that way. And so we want to give them grace. How do we speak the truth in love? Sarah, do you have any pointers for us?
I think this is where I have Asperger's, and like Hugh Ross, another Christian apologist, astrophysicist. And that is actually an advantage because it is often difficult for me to discern when I have been insulted, if it's subtle, especially if it involves subtle sarcasm, because I don't, like Sheldon Cooper on Big Bang Theory, I don't track it very well. And so that works to my advantage, that it doesn't get a rise out of me. But even when I can tell that I've been insulted, it really just doesn't bother me. I don't take it personally. There may be a point at which I decide that this person, you know, you just can't have a conversation at all with this person. I'll cut it off at that point. But if it's not too egregious, I just let it go. You know, and a lot of times I try to inject a little bit of wry humor in there. I've got one fellow from Italy right now who's just determined to interject things into every thread that I post, saying, you know, what's this got to do with your God? And, you know, your God is imaginary and all this thing. And so I'm giving him workout tips because I can't take him seriously. There's not really any point in engaging him on this topic. He just wants to argue. And so I'll deflect, not by throwing insults back at him or being mean to him, but just, you know, telling him, you know, how to get some bigger arms or something. And so that's what I did this morning. Now, you know, I find that humor works really well with people who just, you know, I just to deflect them, they'll then eventually go away. But with other people to just, you know, as the Bible says, a gentle answer turns away wrath. And I like that approach to just come back to somebody, because I think a lot of times these atheists who have these strenuous objections, a lot of them are hurt. You know, a lot of them come from having rejected religion because of some kind of disappointment or abuse or some terrible hurt. And there's some venting going on there. And I find that if I can answer in a way that is sincere and just ignore the barbs, sometimes a productive conversation can happen. I think you just kind of have to take yourself and your ego out of the equation. They don't know you. They don't know you personally. Just try not to take it personally.
Well, that's great advice. Now, Daniel, I know you get a lot of shots fired at you. I've been watching them now for the better part of 2 years. How do you handle it? Because it can be hard, especially, I mean, you know, Sarah, definitely with the Asperger's, boy, it's kind of a blessing there when it comes to this kind of work. But for those of us who don't have that and we can pick up on sometimes, you know, legitimately hurtful things being said to us. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously we can't come into this with, you know, paper thin skin, but we're also human. And I think we have to be honest about where we're at and what we're doing. But Daniel, how do you handle it?
Well, it's ultimately, I'm kind of the opposite of Sarah, which is kind of good for our discussion. It rolls off of Sarah's back pretty well. For me, it goes right to the center of my being a lot of times, even if I understand conceptually on paper that people don't know me. This is just rhetoric, you know, it's helped me actually to develop thicker skin. I think 2 years ago, I was not in as good a place in terms of dealing with criticism as I am today. And I actually thank God for the interactions on social media that have enabled me to be a little bit more firm about this. So I've learned to be firm and also to be civil. I'm not a very emotional person in general, and that is, maybe that's a blessing, or it wouldn't work in a marriage, but maybe it works online. I don't know, but I'm civil and I'm firm, and I want to express to my interlocutors that I'm knowledgeable about things. And there's always a sense of pride, as Sarah says. And, you know, I don't like being called stupid or a fool, or I don't understand science and all this kind of stuff. It's one reason why I wrote the book and I'm doing the podcast that I do. But one thing that's really interesting is again, what Sarah said, is that it's easier when you don't take it personally. And when you recognize what Jesus says about when you stand for truth. I mean, you don't have to, you know, read the whole counsel of the word to know that people will respond bitterly and wrathfully for whatever reason to God's word, even if it's just a conviction or whatever the case may be. But Jesus, I mean, here's the God of the universe who is mocked and ridiculed, you know, in Matthew, spit upon and hung on a cross. And so as Hebrews says, you know, we haven't resisted sin to the point of bloodshed. And so blessed are you if you're mocked and persecuted, you know? And so I try not to be personal. I always try not to be personal. And allow the offense to come through what I'm saying and a stand for truth. And there are several skeptics on Twitter that I can have a congenial exchange with. I'm not going to change their mind, but I can at least be kind and civil to them. But I think for me as a Christian, I've learned to develop a better sense of what it means to be civil and to be patient.
Now, I have to say, I do appreciate the insults that have been hurled at me when they're funny, you know, so kind of like, well, that was funny. So I'm going to.
Let me tell you a funny story, how Sarah was talking about humor earlier and you're talking about humor now. I thought it's a great story. So I said something on Twitter months ago, and I see this meme a lot. You see the referee meme. So there's memes on Twitter. If you don't know what a meme is, it's a picture with a little caption that somebody makes to make fun of what you're saying. And so Christians and atheists both use memes. They're cute. They can be cute and they can be funny if you use them wisely. So one time this guy memes me an NFL referee, you know, making a signal like penalty for using poor logic is the caption or something like that. Right. So it's an NFL ref with a caption, poor logic penalty, et cetera, et cetera. So I've saw a couple of these things. So I decided to build my own meme of Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth up in the booth talking about the ref making a bad call. And I got to use the meme not long ago when somebody threw that ref meme out at me and the guy just busted out laughing. So he went from like totally criticizing me to like, hey man, that was a good one.
It is good, because one thing that is definitely certain is that none of us are experts on everything. And I know sometimes it can be really frustrating for me if I'm engaging with someone, and it doesn't matter if they're a believer or unbeliever. And it's obvious by what they stated that they don't have a very good grasp of what we would call orthodox Christian teaching. I mean, just foundational things that, you know, every believer, or if you've read the Bible, you should be able to know these things, whatever these things are. And, but to take that moment and stop and really just realize, hey, you know what? I don't know everything about everything. And while I may be more knowledgeable in this area and they may be less knowledgeable, I guarantee if we dig just a little bit deeper, we're going to find an area that they're more knowledgeable in than what I am. And so, you know, how can I respond with grace towards them? Maybe even grace that they're not willing to give me. And that's hard. But Daniel, you know, you said something that brought to my mind. It's kind of like this. If we're going to do ministry like Jesus, then we should not be surprised when the attacks come. We should expect them to come and be ready for them. That doesn't take away the pain. It doesn't take away any hurt. But realize that if we're doing our job, then the attacks are definitely going to come. And if we go a long time without attacks, then it means we're probably not doing our job. I mean, not, that's not a guarantee. But let's shift gears for just a moment. I kind of want to get into a little bit of the nuts and the bolts about the types of questions that you see online. I know, Daniel, you and I have talked about this before, but there's generally kind of a handful of questions that I've noticed come up pretty often online. But Sarah, what are some of the types of questions that you normally see either hurled at you or you just see in general online?
Lately, the source of questions that I get from non-believers are just the rhetorical kind of snarky questions, which, I don't pay a lot of attention to those. The sorts of questions that I've gotten in the past have been more specific. They're really wanting to understand how a particular scientific phenomenon fits in with scripture. For instance, miracles is a big one. Mm-hmm. People trying to figure out how miracles fit in, both scientifically and theologically. For a long time, the age of the universe was a big deal. I don't get a lot of questions about that anymore for whatever reason. Often it is questions to do with the problem of evil, which I'm not sure why they want to ask a scientist that question, or if that's just something that they ask everybody, or if they think that's a showstopper, but that's a pretty common one. Daniel, I'm not sure you get sort of the same questions that I get.
Yeah, Sarah, and we kind of get, I mean, you get more of the science questions than I do, but one of the things that I see a lot, I get, and I see with Sarah there, is the idea that, or the accusation, it's not really a question. Sometimes we get a lot of, I think, as we said earlier, using discernment is helpful here, because sometimes people will just level the accusation, you don't understand science. And so there is this huge issue, at least that I've seen, where, I mean, Sarah, like just the other day, I was in a thread with Sarah, and somebody had said something about Sarah's credentials, and, you know, it was very demeaning. But yet the people that say these things are not themselves credentialed scientists, and so it wasn't, they're not really questions, but they're accusations. But mm-hmm. I think the questions, the good ones, are generally wanting to know, like I've had genuine questions about how I reconcile astronomy and cosmology with Christianity. I get a lot of people asking me questions about evolution, and then they get me to say something about, well, why do you doubt it? And then the mockery, it opens up. Sometimes you'll have a long series of questions that only in the end, they're trying to get you to say certain things so that they can use that to turn around and sort of make you look foolish in that sense. But I think, by and large, and maybe Sarah can certainly speak to this more than I can, having been on both sides of the atheist and Christian fence, that I think Sarah's role, especially in science today, is so important, because predominantly so many objections that I've seen on internet and in person too, have been in relation to what a lot of skeptics believe is the incompatibility of science and Christianity. That seems to be the sort of dominant theme that I see. If I were to classify a lot of the questions and discussions that I've had, it is along these lines of the alleged incompatibility of science and faith. And so maybe Sarah can talk to that a little bit more.
The alleged incompatibility of science and faith. I get that a lot. Usually it's not in the form of a question. Usually, like Dan said, it's in the form of an accusation, or just, you know, how can you think this? How can you believe this? I'll frequently throw out these, I call them truth bombs. I'll just say there's no real conflict between Christianity and science. And then people come back with, you know, oh, really? How can you say that? And then they'll throw up specific objections and things like, you know, the flood or the sequence of events in Genesis, things like that. It's unfortunate I don't get a lot of sincere questions from the atheist side, because I would love to engage on that level and to actually answer these questions. But really, they're just often, you can tell, they're looking for a point of entry to start an argument where, like Dan said, they're trying to get you to say something specific so then they can, you know, they can mock you or show that you're wrong. You know, it would be nice if we got more real questions.
You know, this has happened to me, and I'm sure it's happened to Sarah a lot too, where I will say something and people will, what they call screenshot, they'll take a picture of the screen of what you've said, and then they will retweet it or parade it around and say, look what this guy said, look what this guy did. I have several people who do that. I sometimes engage in philosophical discussions with some skeptics, and they will take my tweets and retweet them, and, you know, mock what they perceive is my ignorance of things. And that's a large part of what goes on. Sarah, you know Ray. We both have Ray in common. I had a nice discussion with him yesterday about evolution that did not end in, the back and forth. Ray is kind of cheeky. You know, he's a nice guy. He's never really entirely personal. He just can't believe we believe in Jesus and Christianity and science. But Ray's a decent fellow, and I had a decent conversation with him. But it was a long term. You know, I've had this sort of weird long term Twitter relationship with this gentleman. And he kind of jumps in every once in a while, and he jumps in. And so this is the other thing. This is another thing I think that is interesting to me is that if you're on Twitter for any length of time or Facebook or social media, and you have the same skeptics are coming around to engage you, I think you can take that as part of the discernment package and say, look, this guy is genuinely interested in what I'm having to say, because they're every other day or every week or so I hear from them. And so with that in the back of your mind, you can begin to develop a civil working relationship with the person. You know, you realize, okay, they may be coming here to mock, but they're coming here. If they really thought I was silly, this is the other thing too. If they really thought I'm as foolish as they're saying that I am, I don't think they would be giving me the time of day. And so recognizing sort of the long-term, who's coming around your social media posts and making comments? And you think in the back of your mind, big picture, you know, okay, so they're here all the time. Why not spend the time to extend civility to them and see if you have at least a conversation or breakthrough where there's at least some mutual respect being established. And that takes time and discernment and patience, as we've been talking about. But I think Sarah has a lot more of those than I do, where you have the regulars that come about and exchange with you, Sarah. So maybe you could share about some of your experience there.
Yeah. So most of my regulars are believers. I did have a few who were seekers. And interestingly, I had a fellow last week who had asked some questions. And at first, you know, I always wonder, okay, you know, are they trying to set me up here? Is this snark? But he actually turned out to be sincere and asked some questions. And he wanted to know, for instance, what evidence was there for the supernatural? Why do I believe in that? And I said something about near-death experiences, which I find very compelling. I think it's going to be a very powerful apologetic going forward, because there are serious papers being written about this. So I directed him to that. And he came back a little while later and said, this is fascinating. And he was reading as much of this stuff as he could. And then he disappeared for a few months. And then I got a message from him saying that what he had read about near-death experiences had undermined his faith in naturalism. And as a result, he had pursued other arguments for Christianity and had decided to become Christian and was joining a church. And I was so grateful that he told me that. And I've had another fellow do the same thing a couple years ago. And you never know how those conversations are going to pay off. And I'm really glad that I didn't write these people off as being kind of shallow or insincere. They weren't. That's where that gift of discernment comes in, if you've got it. But so these guys, yeah, they kind of hung around and asked questions. And I'm really glad that I engaged with them. You know, even if it's just one or two people, my goodness, you know, what a privilege to have had any part in someone, you know, coming to faith like that. But, you know, and I've got a few other regulars that I kind of doubt they will ever change their minds, you know, and I could be wrong. You know, God works his works in people, but, you know, and sometimes it's just fun to have these people around, because it can be a seed for a conversation. It can kick something off. It helps other people to understand people maybe who don't, they're too shy and they don't want to engage, but they're watching. So there's a good reason to have these people around. And sometimes they're just funny, you know. Sometimes there's just some entertainment value too.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, be sure to check back next Monday when we continue our conversation with Sarah about sharing your faith in social media. You can subscribe to our podcast on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, Patreon, Google Play, Spotify, and many other podcast platforms. And if you're interested in learning more about engaging skeptics and non-believers in social media, we highly encourage you to come and participate in our monthly Atheist and Christian Book Club. Check out atheistchristianbookclub.com. That's atheistchristianbookclub, all together,
www.thewatchmanfellowship.com for more information about the club and how you can join us for free on Zoom. All of our podcasts are produced for the general public and are free of charge. We would love to have you as a financial supporter of Apologetics Profile. And it's easy to do. Just visit us at patreon.com/watchmanfellowship. That's patreon.com/watchman fellowship for more details. Thanks for spending time with us today. We hope you've been encouraged. And for Watchman Fellowship and Apologetics Profile, I'm Staff Apologist Daniel Ray.